Actor, magician Todd Robbins' career has been inspired by a fascinating variety of influences, from his college acting partner Annette Bening to his sideshow activities at Coney Island and work with the Big Apple Circus, to his playing piano in Woody Allen's band and magic adventures with Penn and Teller. Currently, Todd can be seen on the Investigation Discovery Channel series True Nightmares, which features Todd as the tall, handsome, elegant, slightly unsettling host, think a modern-day Vincent Price, telling bizarre, true tales of murder and mayhem. Todd is an authority on early jazz as well, and sees the dark and light sides of jazz in all his favorite art. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Todd Robbins epitomizes the inspiration one gets by taking risks. He grew up in Los Angeles, where we initially met, went to school and lived for years in San Francisco, and eventually moved to Manhattan. I asked him how these different environments inspired his work.
I moved from San Francisco, had never been to New York, just decided to move here.
And what prompted that?
The guy who shot President Garfield, when asked, why did you do it? His response was, it seemed like a good idea at the time.
That's really something, moving here without having ever been here.
Yeah. And what happened was a friend of mine from San Francisco I think it was from originally here, moved back, and I said, if you see any sublets on the board up at Actors Equity or wherever, and one came up for someone that was going on the road with a musical and needed, it was a 6-month sublet. I knew nothing about the city, nothing.
And how old were you when you moved?
Maybe 22.
Okay.
Yeah, about that, yeah. And, The end result was, I called the woman, and she said, well, I'm leaving at the end of the week, or the next week, or whatever. It was very, very short. And if you want it, I got to meet you. So I booked a flight. As soon as I got off the phone, I booked the flight, and booked a hotel, and got on that plane the next day, flew here. Landed somewhere, a strange exotic place known as Newark, New Jersey.
I've heard of it.
Did not know where that was in relation to New York. I mean, this was 35 years ago.
No, but okay? I'm laughing because I remember somebody knew that I wanted to come to New York. Yeah. And they said, you can stay with a friend of mine that's right by New York City, in Port Jefferson. And I somehow wound up in Port Jefferson and thought I was going to walk out the front door and there was going to be Broadway, and it wasn't.
No, not close. Not quite. It's You can get there from here, but that's about as good.
So continue.
So anyway, so I ended up asking, going to information and say, how do I get into Manhattan? They said, there's a bus right out the door. Got on the bus, took me to another exotic place called the Port Authority Bus Terminal. Mm-hmm. That was entertaining. Mm-hmm. Walked out onto 8th Avenue, had no idea where the hotel was, and I had no idea where the sublet was going to be. I think I asked a cop or someone. I said, I need to get to this hotel. And they went, oh, the Milford Plaza. It's a block and a half this way. They're like, oh, well, that's a
well done,
sign.
You.
So I went to the Milford Plaza and checked in, and then from the room called the woman. And I said, I don't know where you are. And she said, I'm at the Whitby. It's on 45th between 8th and 9th. So I was a half a block away. So everything kind of just fell into place. Went there, wrote her a check, flew out the next day, and packed up everything and moved to New York. And then while here, during that 6-month sublet, found an old rundown building around the corner that they were doing a whole sweat equity thing. There was a community action group that was overseeing the building and the renovation of it, all this. And they needed people that could, for a very, very cheap rent, could get into the building. They would put a new front door on your apartment. Everything on the inside was up to you to do. And it had been a shooting gallery. There was a foot and a half of garbage everywhere. There was a junkie sleeping on an old mattress the first time I saw it. And I looked around and went, I'm home. I'm home. And took the apartment. And it took a month just to clean up, shovel every night for like 4 or 5 hours, just shovel just the garbage and everything that was strewn around that place. And finally got it semi-livable, actually did a little renovation myself. And then it was like, oh, we're going to buy the building. We bought the building, became a co-op and a housing development fund co-op, which was a thing that was sponsored by various community action groups in the city and all that to keep housing reasonable. And but it worked for us. We were one of the few real success stories of this. And ended up buying that apartment for $500, a one-bedroom apartment. And then we did the renovation and basically have a brand-new building. It was 20 years ago we did the renovation, but everything's in very good shape. I am the president of the co-op, La-Di-Da, in Hell's Kitchen. Thank you very much.
Is it still called Hell's Kitchen?
Even though it's changed so much. They've been trying new names.
I like that name.
Back in the 90s, they went to the original name of the area, which was Clinton, because it was DeWitt Clinton's farm. Mm-hmm. But the conservative Republican developers didn't like the idea of having an area named after, seemingly named after a Democratic president.
Oh, funny.
So it didn't stick.
So it's still Hell's Kitchen.
And so it went back to Hell's Kitchen. And now they try calling it Midtown West.
I still like Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah, Hell's Kitchen, yeah.
Well, I'm struck as you're talking about this, that the courage, the not even thinking about it, just doing it, you needed to do it, that this is something that I see with certainly the successful artists, but also the artists that I really admire, that are doing this for a living. And that is I need to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to try it. And it doesn't mean that you're going to be rich, that there's a guarantee of this, but it is that that entrepreneurial spirit that I'm going to get out there and do it. And I know that when, I don't know if it would be 20 years ago, what people would say to me about when everything shifted from our parents, my dad worked for the phone company for 30 years. When all of that changed and people knew that they weren't going to work for, that model didn't exist anymore.
A pension?
Yes. I thought, you know, all my friends who are in the arts that do this kind of thing, that say, oh, I need to meet somebody on the opposite coast, I'm going to fly there, that have been living this way anyway, it's finally our time. We have these skills. And I'm not saying it being better or worse, but it is a great way in a way to live, I think, to say I'm going to jump on these things and create something, an opportunity.
Because with our lifestyles as performers, whether it is jazz or acting or magic or whatever, when the gig is over, you're out of a job.
Right. So you've always got to create something.
And you get used to that. And that is the norm now, that people bounce around from position to position, job to job. And it requires a certain flexibility of spirit that has been part and parcel of the arts from the very beginning.
New York, New York,
New York, New York,
New York, New York.
It's a wonderful time. And the battery's
down, the people ride in a hole in the ground. New York, New York, it's a wonderful town. We've got one day here and not another minute. See the famous sight.
We'll find the romance and danger waiting in it beneath the Broadway lights.
But we pair on our chests, so what we like the best of the nights.
Oh! New York, New York, a wonderful town. The Bronx is up and the battery's down. The people ride in a hole in the ground. New York, New York, it's a wonderful town.
Most people don't change until they're forced to change. Mm-hmm. And great artists are always manipulating change, whether it's moving, trying something new, don't you think?
Oh, very, very much so. And, you know, we think of the artists of the past, the big names in art, whether it be music or fine art. And, you know, Rembrandt must have been a hustler. You know, Michelangelo was like, we're going great on that ceiling. Let me tell you, that ceiling needs painting. It's good. I like what you've done with the place, but let me tell you, I could do something with that ceiling.
And that's funny.
I have no doubt because we've known some names in jazz, and a number of them were just really aggressive jerks. Because they were always hustling.
Well, and you have to, and you create these things. And one of the places that you were fortunate, I think, to live, because I love it, is San Francisco.
Yeah.
And you heard a lot of Turk Murphy.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Talk about, because you brought me some Turk Murphy, which I was very excited about, because I don't know that I've ever played Turk Murphy on this show. And that's somebody I listened a lot to in my early years as well.
You know, there's a certain kind of dismissing of Turk because the music as it was in the old days was performed more than played. And there was that quality about Turk that, you know, in a place called Earthquake Magoons, music played by Turk Murphy at Earthquake, that has a almost show businessy, I won't say hokey, it's not your father's mustache
but it has a bit of that.
It has
flavor.
A bit of that, yeah. And the fact that they were doing old music when everyone at a time, you know, when he was coming up, this dissatisfaction. Of the 1930s, big band, sweet bands, this is where you made your money, you're on the road, it's a grind, you're playing music you hate, led to a dissatisfaction that some went to bebop.
Right.
And others looked back, which is exactly what Turk and his cohorts in the San Francisco scene decided to do. They got together at the Musicians Union and had a jam session and were playing Louis Armstrong. So they'd play a record and listen to it and try to get that feel. And it was real flat-footed. It does not swing. It has drive to it, but it doesn't swing because it was a pre-swinging music. They were going for that transitional period from ragtime into jazz, and it was all about dancing. And therefore, it was kind of flat-footed. And the stuff that I sent you is actually one of my favorite albums. It was made back in the late 50s. And it has a little more drive, and it's a little lighter than most of the Turk stuff. And it has, but mainly because of two elements. Birch Smith was on cornet, who was just a great player. He played great lead, great ideas. And the wonderful, again, volatile Don Yule. on piano, doing kind of between stride and Jelly Roll Morton and whatever fit best.
I love Daniel.
Yeah, yeah. I got to be very good friends with Pete Clute, who was Turk's partner and his piano player, who was just a balls-out ragtime player in this band. And it just always reminded me, listening to it, there was something just joyous about it. It was like a very graceful 300-pound woman dancing. It just kind of lopes along in a really great way, and you can't, as we say in the sideshow, it's guaranteed to put a smile on your face, or there's something wrong with your smiling apparatus. And that's really what it's all about.
Murphy and his band on New Orleans Stomp, a favorite of my guest, actor-magician Todd Robbins. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. You also brought me some Cliff Edwards. This is great. This gives us kind of a Disney connection our California days. I love Cliff Edwards, and I don't know that a lot of people know his history. They certainly know the Disney character. Yeah. Talk a little bit about Cliff.
Cliff was another dark guy. He was married like 6 times. He was, let's talk about the bad stuff and then we'll get to the good stuff.
No, come on. Keep it going.
He was married many times. He made more money during the 1920s as a vaudeville performer than just about anyone else because he was in such demand. Recorded hundreds of sides. Introduced songs like "It Had to Be You" and "I'll See You in My Dreams" and on and on. And you know, he had a number of demons and was a difficult man to be around. But Walt Disney loved him, and when the scene sort of passed Cliff by, Walt kept supporting him and actually paid for his apartment. There were two people, Cliff Edwards and Scatman Crothers, were the two people that Walt loved so much that he kind of subsidized their later years. And but Cliff had this incredible range, about the 3-octave or so range of singing. He, again, performed the music. He could do all sorts of the scat singing and the weird instrument, kind of Mills Brother-like. It's actually a throwback to a guy who we talked about last time, Gene Green, who would do all kinds of imitations and strange sound effects, and played wonderful ukulele. It can be done. And
don't diss my first instrument.
Oh, okay.
I love ukulele.
And it's nice that it's sort of come back and is part of our world again. And he just had a great feel for music and just the way he performed. And in the 30s, the 20s were very big for him. The 30s were not so hot. And he did a number of party records. And these were kind of risque double entendre songs. There was one called I'll Give It to Mary with Love. And
said the man who was married 5 times,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
And, you know, at the end of the chorus, I'm talking about a kitten. And there's another fun one called I'm a Bear in a Lady's Boudoir.
Which is what you brought me.
And the reason I brought that is because I heard it years ago. I was like, who is that piano player? Because it's a really swinging style of piano, but it's rooted earlier than what was being played. It doesn't, it's the 30s, but it doesn't sound like Teddy Wilson or Fats Waller. It's like, who, and it's not kind of the swing piano that was coming in, and like, who is it? I had no idea. And only a handful of years ago, I discovered it was a guy named Ben Light, who got his start playing ragtime. He's from Brooklyn originally. He got his first job was playing in a saloon in Colorado, 1915, and continued working all the way up to his when he died in the 1960s.
One, dee-da-da-dee-da-da. You may talk about your colleges, fair Harvard and old Yale, and all the universities whose banners brave the gale, and all the football heroes, their glory and renown. I never went to college, but I know I've been to town. I may not be a football hero, but I'm a star with the beautiful girl. You never see me in the thick of a fight, 'cause I do my scoring mostly at night. I never tackle any dummies. I've played the best from near and far. No, I ain't. No, I'm not a football hero. But I'm a bear in a lady's boudoir. They play football on the gridiron, where the ground is rough and hard. I do my playing on a divan. The ladies all say I'm a triple threat man. I never have to call for timeout, for I'm always up to par. Oh, I ain't, no, I'm not a football hero, but I'm a bear in a lady's boudoir. I never fought for Alma Mater, because she never fought for me. The boys win a letter for not playing rough. I should get an alphabet for doing my stuff. I'm pretty good at center rushing. That's the place I really star. Oh, I may not be, I'm not a football hero, but I'm a dog in a lady's boudoir. One time I swung into action.
I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired.
So Ben Light did all these, and then in the 50s with the whole kind of Liberace pop sound that was coming in, and he had this whole resurgence and was playing the exact same stuff he had been playing for decades, but it all fit, especially when he would do the Latin and kind of play a Latin beat to it. It all the syncopation just fell in. It seems like this must have been, I don't know the history of the tune, Benny's Bounce, but it seems like it was something from much earlier, because it has kind of a little bit of a stride, definitely ragtime feel to it, and just a nice little pop foxtrot.
On Benny's Bounce. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Thank you. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. Our show is made possible in part with generous support from Steinway & Sons and from East Hampton Indoor Tennis, 8 indoor and 20 outdoor courts in a quiet, beautiful park-like setting. Visit ehit.ws for more information. For a schedule of upcoming programs, visit our website at jazzinspired.com. You can download podcasts of Jazz Inspired free on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Email us at info@jazzinspired.com or visit us on Facebook and Twitter at Stride Queen. To find out more about my CDs and where I'm touring, and to sign up for our email newsletter, visit judycarmichael.com. Additional support is provided by Jazz Times Magazine, providing entertaining and provocative coverage of the jazz scene since 1970. On the web at jazztimes.com. And check out my new CD, my first with originals, Can You Love Once More? Judy and Harry play Carmichael and Allen, available on iTunes and at judycarmichael.com. My guest is actor-magician Todd Robbins. Charles Osgood talked to me about music and the rhythm of writing and comparing it with that, because I think of people that I know are musicians, which you are as well, how they use their knowledge of music, maybe even subconsciously, not thinking about it, but that everything they do winds up being musical, because you and your magic and presenting that, you're a big fan and, and a great practitioner of close hand magic, which I adore. But I always think of the grace of that and the rhythm of it and seeming very musical.
Well, you know, especially jazz has a beginning, middle, and end. You state the melody, you take off and you come back, kind of sum up something that is not a straight statement of the melody, but isn't influenced by the improvisation you've done. And whether it's storytelling, which is what I do on True Nightmares, and you have to understand that that simple, but as Red Garland put, simple ain't easy.
Yeah, exactly.
And you have to understand that form. And so it's great to be aware of that form in other, if you're, whether I'm doing a magic trick, which is a beginning, middle, and end, you know, you take a card, the card is lost, the card is found, everyone lives happily there ever after. Or telling a story that, and you have to figure out a way of sort of capturing the imagination. It's a little bit of a sales pitch too. You capture the imagination, you sell them on the idea, and then get them to buy into it to stay to the end.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. That's great.
And so that's also my
background. That's the best storytelling, right?
That's my background working in sideshows and literally standing out in front and talking people into buying a ticket into the show. There's techniques for that, and it's all the same stuff.
That's fascinating.
And music is great. I've always been fascinated. So it's so wonderful to be doing what I'm doing now, sort of an ambassador of darkness.
Right,
and
right.
Some people are surprised. It hasn't really surprised me at all, because I've always been fascinated with character, and character often comes from adversity and darkness. You know, I grew up outside of Long Beach in Long Beach, but in the suburban area, and I wanted to go downtown every chance I could, because it was seedy and it had character and the old buildings and what was that? And there's, you know, yeah, and you know, you understand that. And when I got into music, and it's interesting now, I don't really associate too much with the ragtime and the traditional jazz people, because they're all about the music. And I'm like, where did this come from? What function did it have? And it was often very, very dark.
And you want the context.
Oh, yeah.
All of that.
Yeah, because that's what makes it rich. The good news is it is traditional jazz is having a big revival in the city, or has for a number of years. And it's younger people that have kind of grabbed hold of it. It started really in New Orleans with various bands, the Baby Soda and Tuba Skinny and folks like that. And they're playing it. And it's funny, because I was talking to Kelso, John Kelso, one time about this, and I said, so what do you think of those guys? He goes, well, you know, they like playing their own compositions, and they're very vibrant, and they often don't have real command of the instruments. I said, so like the first generation of jazz musicians. And they went, never thought of it that way.
Tuba Skinny on Jazz Battle. I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. My guest is actor Todd Robbins, host of True Nightmares on the Investigation Discovery Channel. We recorded this conversation a few months ago on Halloween, which Todd and I thought appropriate considering the name of Todd's series.
For me, I go back to pre-jazz into ragtime, and I love the transitional guys, the guys that, like Ubi Blake, like Lucky Roberts, that when you hear they're playing, it doesn't sound like concert hall ragtime, and the people are playing the score. They were playing it for a reason. They were playing it in houses of ill repute. They were playing it in saloons, and there were a line of players that wanted to take that gig. So they had to have a drive to it. They had to be distinctive. Everyone had their own style, and it had to fit the sporting life culture that they were working in.
This is so interesting that you're saying it, because I was listening to these, because you sent me these tracks, and these are things that I haven't listened to in years.
Yeah.
And I was mainly struck by the rawness of it, that it wasn't smooth. And I was thinking back to what originally drew me to these things, and going from a Ubi Blake stylistically, and not just within the context of when he was playing it, but just listening to him with no context, let's say, next to Count Basie, who you also brought me doing when he was Bill Basie, doing Prince of Wales, which is much smoother sound, much more clarity to the notes. It's, someone would say, cleaner, maybe technically, but the energy is really there. But as you're talking about these guys were playing in houses of ill repute, you wouldn't want something that was all pristine cleaned up. You want that raw energy. And I never thought of it just that way. That's really interesting.
Can I use the phrase pre-fornication music?
Yeah.
Good. Okay.
No, it's really, but I'm thinking about that. That's really, and you definitely get the joy in all of these. But I love this Ubi. Yeah. Speak just a bit about this Ubi Blake track, because this is really interesting.
It is interesting because he's playing a pop song as opposed to one of his compositions. And he's playing the old pop song, Ma, He's Making Eyes at Me. And there is, it doesn't swing. And the Lucky Roberts also doing Junkman Rag doesn't swing.
Not in the way we think of swing music.
No. Right. But there is a strut to it.
Yeah.
There is an attitude. There is just, and it, especially Ma, because he does the same thing that you in a jazz solo, except it's really more throwing back to ragtime.
Mm.
And he gets away from the melody a little bit and kind of riffs on things. But at the same time, you can't really classify it as jazz.
The improvisations don't extend the melody in the same kind of way, opening it up. It's more of these repeated sort of ragtiming figures.
Riffs. The kind of riffs that are played that that syncopate the melody. And it gets further and further away from the melody, but it's always there.
Bit about the Benny Moten tracks that you brought me, because of course I know Prince of Wales, because you know that's what got me doing this. But Elephant Wobble, talk about that. I loved it.
It's interesting to see the development of the Kansas City sound that we know from Basie and Jay McShann and a number of others that were kind of grew out of this. But early on, it was ragtime town. James Scott, the famous composer, was there and was playing very riffy ragtime, a lot of figures repeated over and over again. And you hear this in the early Benny Moten. It's like 1923, about the same time that King Oliver was coming into prominence in Chicago. And it's a wild sound that you have not heard before. It's almost rock and roll. It has the rawness of rock and roll. It's blues, and it has this 8/8 feel. It doesn't swing. It just, and you can just imagine this small little band in a hot little nightclub in the summer in Kansas City, and people just having the time of their life. And then it gets larger. The band gets larger and it adapts, but it still has that riff quality that is going to influence Count Basie later on. And then Basie comes to the scene, kind of gets stranded and gets in there. And Benny Moten was the piano player. He was a hell of a piano player. Very strong, very solid piano player. But when he heard Basie, he was like, this is the next thing. This is the next thing. And they did two pianos, but he would stand up and conduct when Basie was playing because Basie took over and brought that East Coast style and then this Midwestern blues and put it together. And that's the Basie sound.
True Nightmares mm-hmm. as a logical evolution for you, because I have seen all these. And one of the great things, of course, we're close friends, but it's also fascinating, even separate from our friendship, to watch the evolution of an artist, mm-hmm. which you've done with me as well. Mm-hmm. But I've seen you come at this in many different ways, and this seems the perfect place for you, I have to say. Talk about the show a bit and tell people that might not have seen it and how they can see it, because I think it's a great new way of telling these kind of stories that really isn't happening on television, at least for me.
Yeah, it's, you could call it a docudrama series. It's all about true crime. It's true stories of murder and mayhem that all have a quirky quality to them. And an ironic twist that hopefully you don't see coming. And
it's scary and funny at the same time, yeah. Which I, if I may be so bold, I felt about a number of your shows that I've seen, which I like, though. Yeah. I think that's great.
Well, you know, there's nothing more wonderful than the laughter that comes after a good scare.
Exactly.
And so by combining those two, it's always been fun. It's been something that's very much been infused in my performance for a long time. And it just keeps it from being kind of trivial amusement.
Mm.
You know, I made a lot of money doing entertaining at corporate parties. And you're part of the decor. You're part of the hors d'oeuvres. You know, it's a background music.
We've all done those gigs.
Yeah, we've all done it. And it doesn't matter how good you are, that's the function.
Mm.
And I've never really enjoyed doing that, and always tried to take things back into the theater, because when you have people that are coming as a destination to take in what you're doing,
it's much
different. Playing a club versus a concert, it's a worlds apart. You might be playing the same notes, but it's worlds apart. And so I have always wanted to do that. I saw people like Penn and Teller and went, this is it. This is, it's performance with content. and it's about something, and it's fun and it's entertaining, but it goes further than that. And so that's really what I've been doing sideshow material, which has very much an edge to it. I mean, you're not the swords I'm swallowing, but the idea that I'm swallowing a sword has the edge to it. And eating fire and doing things that are dangerous. There's no flail factor in any of those things. You do it wrong, you die. And I just like just playing with what is reality and what is illusion and dark and light and all those themes. Because jazz does that. I mean, let's face it. From the very beginning, it has always been about taking what is established and then seeing how far you can get away with it, away from it, while still being true to it.
Mm-hmm. And as you're saying, it's funny that you're saying this as a fellow Southern California person, that you talked about illusion and, you know, the dark and light, and I, like you, wanted to see something beyond this sort of perfect world that I was living in when I was in Newport Beach, you were in Long Beach. Yeah. And I'm thinking of a lot of that is illusion.
Oh.
And you wanted to go downtown and see the old buildings.
I just did a performance in Pasadena back at Scare LA, which was a Halloween and horror-themed convention. And I said, you know, I'm going to be talking about lies tonight, which is appropriate in California, since this place is nothing but a lie. The natural classification of Southern California is desert. But do you see desert anywhere in the Los Angeles area? No, it's because someone a long time ago came to the place and denied what it was and said, we're going to build paradise here, damn it. And you're all going to have a nice day. And there's that tension that I love when I go out there.
Oh, no, it's very much that way. That's fascinating.
People are in complete denial of that, but I just like sitting back and watching
what do you think? I'm fascinated by that because you had that early on. Now in that living in Long Beach, you wanted to go see the downtown areas. I wanted to go to New York for that very reason. Mm-hmm. I was drawn to something that had a mix where everybody didn't, you know, at least in the community I was living in, where I looked like a lot of the people. I wanted to go somewhere where everybody didn't look like me.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a lot that was different. Was that something that appealed to you when you first came to New York? Because talk about going to the epicenter of dark, Kitchen.
Anything is possible, at least it was. Things are changing, but it's still anything is possible in New York, good or bad.
Yeah, and you like that.
Yeah, someone said, what is New York like? And I said, it is diamonds atop a dung heap. And it's the best of times, the worst of times, and sometimes
every day,
and sometimes at the same time. But so it's great that way, and that's what I love doing these things on True Nightmares, because we all have a dark side, and there's something very therapeutic about letting it out, and especially on this day, Halloween, which allows people to kind of pretend they're someone else, and other people to show exactly who they are.
Oh, I think Halloween does show who you are.
Yeah.
It's very significant what you choose to be, don't you think?
Oh, I think
that's what makes it so great.
Yeah. And like I say, some people can fantasize and other people just can show their true, let their dark flag fly on this one day and get away with it. And that's really what I think the appeal of True Nightmares is, that people know that when we're talking about serial killers and strange things, that they have the seeds in them. We've all had dark urges. The difference is we haven't acted upon them the way Ed Gein or Jeffrey Dahmer or any of the countless others did. They went down that path, and that could have been us, but we at some point went, no,
let's dial it back a bit.
Let's dial it back a bit, but it's there. It's still there, you know.
I'll be glad when you're dead, you rascal, you. I'll be glad when you're dead, you rascal, you. You know you've done me wrong. You stole my wife and gone. I'll be glad when you're dead, you rascal, you.
Talk about it, Jordan. Talk about it.
I'm gonna kill you just for fun, you rascal, you. I'm gonna kill you just for fun, you rascal, you. I'm gonna kill you just just for fun. The bugs can have you when I'm done. I'll be glad when you're dead, you rascal, you.
Ah, let me talk about him a while. You ask my wife for some cabbage.
I'm Judy Carmichael, and this is Jazz Inspired. My guest is actor-magician Todd Robbins.
You asked my wife for some...
Now, you have a very talented son.
I do.
And I ask lots of people on this show how they were introduced to the music, if their parents did it. I'm fascinated with which parents pounded into their kids, and then the kids hate it, which ones are light with it. It's so much about the receptiveness of that particular child. Now, in your case, your wife is very creative as well. So Finn, your son, is surrounded by it. But talk a bit about his introduction to the music, because I love what you used as a lullaby.
Yes,
I think that's a great story.
It is funny. My son is Phineas Taylor Robbins. I have a great wife. She let me name my kid after P.T. Barnum. And he is a bit of very much a showman, his own self. He's always been an outgoing kid. And when he was about 3 and a half, my wife saw Billy Elliot and saw the same credit in all the kids' programs saying, you know, their bios saying, thank you, Shirley Grant. And that's the name of a management company. So she contacted him and said, we have a kid that's very outgoing. Here's some videos, his home videos. And they said, we want to meet him. Went out to Jersey to the office there. They took him into the office for about 10 minutes. My wife was like, what happened to my child?
What are you doing with my child?
And they walked in and said, we've never signed anyone so young, but we want him. And he started working almost immediately doing commercials. And loves performing, loves the audition process as well as...
Really?
Well, yeah. He loves just going and meeting people and very outgoing and just seeing, you know, the possibilities, which are really so positive. And... He's gotten very much into sports and it's kind of consumed, and he hasn't really gotten into jazz. However,
there is an opening here.
There's two significant things. One is that when he was a baby, my wife would play lullaby things, you know, and he would respond to that. But one time, just for the heck of it, I put on Turk Murphy, New Orleans Stomp. And it's this, you know, tuba and banjo and blaring trumpet, cornet and trombone and he went out like that. It brought peace to him and he fell asleep. And we used it as a sleep trigger. And the irony of it is, just the other day, he refused to go to sleep. He was all wired up because he was watching football.
I know where this is going.
And I said, okay, you can just lie down there and just, you don't have to go to sleep. And I put on the Turk Murphy. He was out in like a minute and a half.
You know, this is very Manchurian candidate, you know?
Yes, of course. But the good news is, so you can't really listen to Turk Murphy without falling asleep, but I find it amusing. We were down the village. We spent quite a bit of time in Greenwich Village, and we were walking along West 3rd Street, and a friend of ours is the doorman at the Blue Note. And he said, hey, you guys want to come in? We were actually on our way to dinner, but we went in for a few minutes, and it was the Duke Ellington Orchestra.
Oh, great.
And he was floored by it.
Oh, he liked it.
Floored. They're playing the later arrangement of Cotton Club Stomp.
Oh, like and he
the 50s
liked it.
And he was just the power of it and the solos and everything. He was just flipped over and keeps saying, can we go back to it's our friend Todd, ironically. Mm-hmm. Said, can we go back to Todd's place? I want to hear more of that.
So this is good news.
It's very good news.
This is good news. Well, I know people that just say that they play music around the house a lot. Mm-hmm. Don't you play your records? And how does he respond to that?
Oh, he likes it.
He does?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, he enjoys it. There's no two ways about that. Thank you.
Todd, it took forever for us to get together.
Yeah.
But we managed this, trying to get your back and forth. How much time are you spending in California now? A lot, right?
Yeah, I spend a couple of months out there shooting each season, and then go out there, occasionally perform at the Magic Castle and do other projects and things. I'm doing some things in Las Vegas and all over the place. So.
But we managed
yes.
it. We did.
Yeah.
And, you know, I read recently, I don't know if I can't remember if I said it on the show because it was new information for me, but thinking about when we both came to New York, I read recently that statistically the most dangerous year in New York City, was 1981.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't our imagination. It really was dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. And got more so when we hit town.
Perfect, Todd. Thank you. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween to you, and may all your nightmares come true.
Aww, you say the sweetest things. You've been listening to my conversation with actor-magician Todd Robbins. I hope you'll join me here next time when I talk with another creative person about how jazz has inspired their life and work. I'm Judy Carmichael, the host and producer of Jazz Inspired. My production engineer is Curtis Heidoff. You can download podcasts of Jazz Inspired from iTunes or at TalkShoe.com. Our opening music was Airmail Special, and the mid-break music is a smooth one from my CD, High on Fats and Other Stuff. The closing music is Old Fashioned Love from my CD Trio. I'm on piano with Mike Hashem on sax and Chris Lorre on guitar. I've written a new memoir called Swinger, A Jazz Girl's Adventures from Hollywood to Harlem. For more information on where you can find it or to order an autographed copy, visit judycarmichael.com. And for more information on these shows and my new memoir, visit jazzinspired.com and judycarmichael.com. My guest today was actor Todd Robbins, a fellow native Californian and also a fellow Bing Crosby fan. Here's Bing's tribute to our old stomping grounds, San Fernando Valley.
Oh, I'm packing my grill and I'm leaving today, 'cause I'm taking a trip California way. I'm gonna settle down and never more roam, and make the San Fernando Valley my home. I'll forget my sins, yes, yes, I'll be making new friends where the west begins and the sunset ends. 'Cause I've decided where yours truly really ought to be, and it's the San Fernando Valley for me. I think that I'm safe in Staten. She will be waiting when my lonely journey is done. And kindly old Reverend Thomas made us a promise. He will make the two of us one. So I'm hitting the trail to the cow country. You can forward my mail, care of RFD. I'm gonna settle down and never more roam, and make the San Fernando Valley my home. Lonely journey is done, and kindly old Reverend Thomas made us a promise. He will make the two of us one. So I'm hitting the trail to the cow country. You can forward my mail, care of RFD. I'm gonna settle down and never more roam and make the San Fernando Valley my home. And make the San Fernando Valley my home. And make the San Fernando Valley my home.